It's not easy being the one everyone counts on to keep the facility running, no matter the weather or supply chain hiccup. But we get you, Raymond in Buffalo, and Maria in Miami, Jules in Minneapolis, and Stan in Central Indiana, taking control of everything that's under your control. At Grainger, we're here for you with experienced branch staff at over 250 locations so you get the product you're looking for. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Fox Tuesday. Monarch is TV's new smash hit.
We built a dynasty.
Critics rave. It's one of fall's hottest new shows.
Your mother is being blackmailed.
A new Monarch after a new resident.
Monarch, Tuesday at 8 on Fox 7 Austin. Free Fox 7 Austin digital bundle. Download the Fox 7 Austin news app to stream local news morning or night. And the Fox 7 web for weather anytime, anywhere. Then catch the game live with the Fox Sports app. Get it now at fox7austin.com/app.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
He's colossal, stupendous. One might even go so far as to say he's mediocre.
This is our Signal Storm podcast.
I can say this, right? The economy is in the toilet. It's in the crapper, my friends. We just got word here recently from Jerome Powell's Federal Reserve. Yeah, this whole idea of a soft landing, let's get rid of that. We're in for a lot of pain. Government-caused inflation, and the reason why Jerome Powell didn't act is because he was too busy kissing Joe Biden's ass. Oh, it's a transitory. Don't tell him it's going to hit him hard because it's going to make things really tough for Democrats in the midterms. So just tell him it's transitory. It's not real. We'll just make up excuses. Our Democrat voters will believe us. And they did. It's transitory. And the damn media got out there. Oh, it's transitory. It's transitory. Oh, yeah, that's what they said. It's transitory. Now it's not. And now there's going to be a boatload of pain coming our way. And it was unnecessary, and the people you have to thank for it are sitting in Washington, D.C. because of their profligate spending and their out-of-control growth of government, a government that has grown beyond the consent of the governed. Here we are. Here we are. Money for nothing, and government doing jobs it was never intended to do. And the jobs it's supposed to do, the Fed, for example, of course, yes, not part of the American government, but the president, when we have one, nominates the Fed Reserve chairman to make the tough calls. And the tough calls were, hey, we're seeing inflation creeping up. We got to raise interest rates. We should do it incrementally to stop this wave that we know that is coming. Oh, no, we can't do that. It's transitory. It's transitory. It's transitory. Well, guess what? They waited. And now, boom. Three quarter basis points, three in a row, and it's still not enough. Still not enough. And sooner or later, you're going to have to pay the piper. Folks, part of this is our fault. Trust me, government. We allowed them to go to Washington, D.C. and create this federal leviathan that is eating us like a cancer, eating this country like a cancer. And we allowed it. And we abandoned our obligation as citizens of these United States to monitor our government. We said, oh, yeah, we hired you. Go do the job. And then we tuned out and they went up there and screwed up the way teenagers with an unlimited credit card would do. But it's not unlimited. Sooner or later, somebody's got to pay. And guess who it's going to be? Oh, none of those shrubs up on Capitol Hill. That's for damn sure. You and me. We, the people. I'd like to say that the state of Texas is immune from these kinds of things. Although I will say the state of Texas did take the rather extraordinary step, and now it seems providential step, of taking gold out of New York and bringing our gold back here at home. I think we're the only state that houses our own gold, and damned if we aren't going to need it. Because what I fear is going to happen, folks, is a complete economic collapse under the Democrat Party. I just hope we're here to be able to say, told you so. We talk about the economy, but the Texas economy. and what other states could learn, coming up next.
And now a word from our sponsor.
A liberty-loving American takes on Washington, Hollywood, and the whole media establishment. He's Chris Salcedo. Join his fight. Tune in to the Chris Salcedo Show every weekday afternoon on Newsmax.
The establishment media is out of touch with the real things real Texans care about. Real news for real Texans. That's what Texas Scorecard does every day. Learn more and subscribe for free. TexasScorecard.com/Chris.
All right, folks, let's get to our guest, Jeremy Kitchen. He serves as the executive director of Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Jeremy's managed campaigns for conservative lawmakers across the state of Texas, has served as chief of staff for multiple state lawmakers, as well as director of legislative affairs for the largest public policy think tank in the great state of Texas. Jeremy, welcome back to the Salcedo Storm podcast.
Thanks for having me back, Chris. I appreciate it.
Okay, let's you and I dig into first things first. Believe it or not, and a lot of folks who may be listening out of state may not realize, Texas has a surplus of revenue in our government. How did that surplus get there? And then we'll talk about what we're going to do with it.
Sure. Yes, sir. So you are correct. The comptroller has now revised it a few times, but his most recent revision back in, mid-July, if you will, said that we have a projected $27 billion surplus that state lawmakers will be looking at as they appropriate funds for the next budget. Of course, we do a budget every 2 years, so that'll take place starting in January of this next year. How we got there is a combination of a few things, but most of it comes from spending limits that the state, of course, kind of imposes on itself, if you will. And, you know, that's, of course, a big difference between us and, let's say, Congress, who doesn't have a spending limit. But anyway, so the state imposes these spending limits. I believe there's five different ones of them. We adopted a new one this last legislative session, finally, after conservatives have been fighting for it for years. That one dealt with kind of capping the increase, if you will, right, in population and inflation. And so a combination of things, but ultimately here we are with a projected $27 billion surplus, or as we like to call it at Texans for Fiscal Responsibility, an over-collection of tax dollars.
An over-collection of tax dollars. And part of that over-collection, I have to imagine, came from this massive ramp up with pent up demand in the real estate market. And we sure watched property values soar in the state of Texas. How much of that that surplus was because of outlandish prices for homes in Texas?
Sure. I don't have the exact figure in front of me, but that's certainly a factor, if you will, on it, right? Like, these are, of course, the state itself does not collect the property tax, right? That's done or administered, levied locally. But you know, a combination of things. You've got like the gas tax, the sales tax, which is a huge chunk of it, right? You've got all sorts of kind of other investments that are paying dividends. And of course, you know, mind you, that $27 billion surplus does not take into account, right, the rainy day fund, the emergency savings fund, right?
Okay. So maybe this has been a fundamental misunderstanding of me all these years. Are you saying that none of my property taxes makes it to state government? Because I was under the impression some of those property taxes did.
Sure. Yes, sir. No, that's not, some do, right? And they're filtered through formulas, very complicated formulas, which we can certainly try to get into, but it's important to note, right, the separation. And this is definitely something that we hear from taxpayers all the time as confusing, right? Which is, it is your local governments that set rates, right? And that's, of course, they're in the midst of doing that stuff right now as they as they're set for their budgets this next fiscal year, right? However, you know, portions of those property taxes, right, are filtered through the state for things like schools, right, via their formula, stuff like that. And so it gets really convoluted and in the weeds, but they are at least levied locally.
And you know, and that's the problem, I think, with taxes. On the federal level, we have to pay out the nose. Nobody can understand the tax code. They make it so hard for us to do what they say is our patriotic duty. They say your patriotic duty is to pay taxes. And then they sure say we're going to make it the most difficult and arduous task in your flipping life. We're going to make it so damn complicated. And a lot of people bristle at that. But my next question on the state level is this. So we got $27 billion in surplus. What does the executive director of Texans for Fiscal Responsibility and his organization say we ought to be doing with that money?
We say we should return all of it or as much as effectively possible to the taxpayer, and that you can't necessarily do that by writing a check. And so we say the way you do that is by using as much as humanly possible of that surplus to do what's called buying down at least the maintenance and operations portion of the property tax. I don't mean to get too in the weeds, but that is effectively, I think it's 65 to 70% of everyone's individual tax bill, right, comes through the maintenance and operations portion of the tax. It's the school portion of the tax. And you could effectively provide actual property tax relief, not these trinkets that the legislature keeps bestowing upon us. You can effectively provide actual property tax relief, get rid of 65%, right, of your individual property tax bills by just effectively buying down those things with the existing surplus.
That'd be nice. That'd be nice, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, and hopefully this is the legislative session where the Republican Party can no longer stab Texas parents in the back on denying us school choice, parental school choice, and that might actually administratively free up some overhead that maybe require fewer tax dollars if all of a sudden the state's parents or actually the state's taxpayers are receiving a check and you can only spend it on education. You know, you can. So if you are an individual who gets a check and says, well, my kids are all grown, I have nothing to do with this, I got to put it in an education system, well, you'll have to make up your mind. Are you going to put it in your local government-run school? Are you going to put it in your local parochial school or your local charter school? That'll be up to folks in their communities to determine. But what do you think that the fiscal impact of school choice will be? I don't care what the impact is on government. I can give a damn what it's, the impact is on government. I care about what it means for the folks. Do you think at the end of the day, the citizens of Texas, fiscally speaking now, could benefit from parental school choice?
I think undoubtedly they could. It would be absolutely huge. Count us cautiously optimistic that this will be the session in which they get it done. You've had, of course, the governor come out in support of some kind of unnamed approach to that. You see a lot more lawmakers, right, at least publicly saying they're in support of such thing. I think a lot of that can be credited to parents, right, the overwhelming pressure that parents are currently putting on their elected officials up and down the ballot because of things they've seen happen in school, especially over the last few years in the midst of COVID. But undoubtedly, it would have a huge impact for a lot of reasons. But I think chief among them, something that gets lost in that conversation is out of the, I think it was estimated, you know, upwards of $71 billion that were collected in property taxes, for instance, in 2020. A huge chunk of that, a quarter, right, the big kind of quarter of that, over a quarter of that was given towards schools, right? But these are also schools in Texas where you've got superintendents and administrators making more in salary per year than the governor of the state of Texas, right? They're passing these bonds, right, for ridiculously large stadiums, all of those sorts of things. Allowing for school choice would certainly nip a lot of that in the bud.
Yeah, you know, and that maybe that's why so many of these independent school district superintendents were able to thumb their nose at an executive order that Governor Abbott issued about masks for kids. Because, right, hey, I get paid more than the governor. I can tell him to go screw off. And by the way, nobody's going to send me to jail because I'm a superintendent. And nobody stands up to superintendents except for Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. Hey, folks, we're talking to Jeremy Kitchen. He serves as the executive director of Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. Our government, federally speaking, is too big and spends too much of our money. By the way, it has grown beyond the consent of the governed. In your view, is Texas doing better than the federal government? But that's kind of a throwaway question because obviously it is. But that being said, how would you rate Texas's fiscal responsibility?
I would certainly give it a C or below, and I think that's being generous, and that's for a lot of reasons. I'll be quick as I kind of explain. The that, you know, most people look at Texas as some sort of kind of bastion. Obviously, financially speaking, economically, we're doing well. And I think that's, we live in a generally low regulation state, something that's, you know, attractive to businesses generally. However, we have a ridiculous amount of debt, both on the state and local level. And on the local level, I'll highlight that real quick. You know, we keep passing these debt, these bond obligations, right? Saddling future generations with debt, right? Tax increases, that sort of thing to afford it. You know, we always hear about the federal government. Obviously, we're coming up on a pretty somber, you know, somber event here in the next few weeks. It seems like for the U.S. is going to pass $31 trillion in debt. But Texas, even though we're not $1 trillion in debt, I think the last I looked, we were upwards of 300 something billion in debt. You know, that's something that we should definitely address, right? On top of that, state spending, for instance, right? Granted, we've been under this kind of threshold of population or growing by population and inflation, I think, since 2015. Under Republican leadership, right? They've had control of the legislature and almost every statewide elected office for almost 2 years. Our budget is set to grow almost 300%. Over the last two decades, and population hasn't grown that quickly, certainly not inflation. And so we definitely need to get a handle on state spending. We advocate at Texans for Fiscal Responsibility that the budget itself shouldn't grow at all. They should have to work with what they currently have, especially in a world where we have a $27 billion projected surplus, and they should use as much of that as possible to give back to the taxpayers.
Yeah, you know, on that, I mean, it is an axiom that government exists to perpetuate itself. And the constitutions, the federal constitution and the Texas state constitution, exists to restrain that government. I don't want you to get too far into the weeds on this because I know it's way too complicated. But
sure,
if you were going to say if the allowable spending under the Texas constitution were happening, how much larger on a percentage basis is actual spending in the state of Texas that is beyond the scope, in your opinion, of the Texas government?
I'd shudder to give an exact amount, but I would say at least 50% of it. I mean, there's tons of things.
Whoa.
I think you can make a salient argument that there are things that the government is doing that is not the proper role of government.
So you're saying that you with your experience in the way, because you've gone over these budgets in ways certainly our people have not, and certainly in ways that I have not, you're saying that by your estimation, you think the state of Texas spends 50% more than is allowable under the Constitution of Texas?
I would say half of what we currently spend, right, upwards of $260 billion every 2 years, certainly could be used in better ways. Let's put it that way.
Well, no, and that's why I asked. I have no doubt that money could be used in better ways, no doubt in my mind. And that's, of course, why you hire politicians who are allegedly there up there doing your will, allegedly. But the reason I ask this is because of what I mentioned in the federal government before. We have a federal government that has grown beyond the consent of the governed because of apathy, because of politicians that are off in some faraway capital and they forgot where they came from and why they're there, to be quite honest with you, the vast majority of them. And I believe it is this ignoring of law, ignoring these constraints placed on government by our founding documents. In this particular case, for the purposes of our discussion here, Jeremy, the Texas Constitution. And that's why I was very clear. Do you still think, now that I'm giving you those parameters of
gotcha.
The Texas Constitution, do you
sure.
think it's as high as 50% or?
No. So based on what you're saying, I mean, I don't know the exact number. I can tell you this, right, that we have spending limits, which is great in Texas comparatively to Congress and them on the federal level. However, the gimmicks that are played with the budget every cycle, I'll give you an example, right? They pass a budget knowing full well that when they come back the next legislative session for the next biennium, the next 2 years, they're going to adopt what they call a supplemental budget, which ultimately is just like an addition to the previous budget, right? And so they start playing these games with, you know, oh, well, look, we were under this kind of metric of a conservative conservative budget this time, knowing full well that they're going to throw some amount of it in the supplemental the next time.
Right. They're always paying it forward. In other words,
that's right.
Basically saying, well, we have a nice conservative budget. And oh, by the way, we're going to spend even more just before the next session. And we'll tack that on to the next session's bill. And it won't count for this session. You're right. It's political games. And sadly, it's our money that the games are being played with. Jeremy Kitchen, our guest, executive director of Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. So let's you and I talk about how the national economy is impacting the great state of Texas. As you well know, Joe Biden has tanked this economy. As you well know, interest rates, I just saw a stat today, now officially over 6% for mortgage rates and continuing to climb. This time last year, it was under 2% for mortgage rates for a 30-year fixed mortgage. And now it's just massively higher because of the federal government's irresponsibility and the Fed's irresponsibility.
That's right.
How is all of that going to impact? Let's start with interest rates. How is that going to impact Texas? And as if I had to guess, which sector is going to get hit the hardest?
Oh, good Lord. There's a lot to that. To your point, yes, 30-year mortgage rates they've moved above 6%. This is for the first time since November of 2008. They've over doubled since last year, right, to your point. Mm-hmm. I'm in the midst of buying a house right now. Let me tell you, every day is a new adventure when it comes to finding out what my perceived interest rate is going to be. But all of that being said, there is kind of this necessary evil, if you will, right? We're reeling from just frankly, just bad policy from things like the Federal Reserve over the last two decades, right? Not to get too in the weeds, but we've allowed this kind of this practice of quantitative easing for so long, and it's almost this necessary, it's got to get worse before it gets better. And that, you know, I think the Federal Reserve here, and it's going to have to be aggressive, likely increase, right, its rate even higher in order to at least tamp down or get inflation under control.
Oh, no
if
doubt.
They can even do that at all.
No doubt. And again, the reason why that is we have, as you alluded to, dumbasses. If I can use a technical term, dumbasses running the Fed. Not that it has been great under Republican tenure, but here we have, and let's just take the modern example of the modern inflation right now. Fiscal policies coming out of the Congress using the China virus as an excuse.
Right.
They have undertaken spending, which is, in my mind, criminal. It is criminal what they are spending, taking money out of the private sector and investing it all into government so the government never has to feel any pain. Which I find, again, criminal. And when that money started to get into the system, that liquidated money started getting into the system, and then we started coming out of the China virus, out of COVID, then all of a sudden you had this just massive amount of spending going on and not enough supply, and then here comes the inflationary pressures. Now, this happened in short order as soon as Joe Biden took office, okay?
Sure.
We all remember as prices started going up, what did they say the inflation was going to be? Say it with me, the word transitory. Exactly. So it was transitory. So because of the politics of Joe Biden and the left, so they didn't disrupt a political narrative, the Fed said, okay, we won't do anything. And they waited. And they waited and they waited. Now they waited too long. So now they got to go these massive 0.75 basis point raises in the base interest rate. And it's just going bam, 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 hitting the markets, the stock markets and the housing markets the most, which they're bottoming out right now. And that's what I was after. What do you think the housing market in Texas is going to look like in 5 months, 10 months, 15 months?
Well, I got to tell you, I shudder to think of what it would look like. I don't necessarily want to be the prognosticator, but it's definitely going to get worse before it gets better, I think is probably the safest way to say that. Now, I say that with the caveat of we're a huge state, and every locality in the state is quite different. I'm currently calling in, you know, from the Austin area, and it has a ridiculous housing market at the moment, even though, right, that's generally slowed down. That would be different from, you know, if I was out in Lubbock, Texas, right, for instance. But I think collectively it'll get much worse before it gets much better. You know, and that couple that with things like these kind of artificial appraisals that are coming out of these appraisal districts, right, based on market values that they set, right, not necessarily what someone would be willing to buy it at, you know, increasing other burdens, i.e. property taxes and things like that. I think it gets worse before it gets better.
And, you know, and on that, given all the volatility, the hoops we have to jump through to appeal our property taxes is insane. Again, remember we were talking earlier about the federal government and its tax policies. This idea of making it so burdensome and so cumbersome to appeal your tax burden, in particular when you've got a housing market that, I'm sorry, it's cratering. The housing market is cratering because it can't do anything else but that, because we have overvalued homes. Interest rates are going up, so people can't afford that much of a down payment anymore, and they can't afford the monthly payments on these houses anymore.
Yes, sir.
So there's going to be a correction. And Texas used to be one of those states where there were no big peaks and valleys, but the federal government managed to get their contagion even in here. And I'm looking at places in Dallas. I'm seeing places in Austin that you mentioned, places in Houston that are to the moon as far as their valuations, which just 5 years ago would never have been considered.
That's correct, and we're reeling from it, right? People, if they haven't already seen it now, they're going to start getting their property tax bills right here, I guess, October 1st. You know, I'm sure they saw their appraisal, if you will, just a few months ago. Those local governments are setting the rates based on those ridiculous appraisals. And regardless, even though we haven't specifically mentioned this yet, you've got local governments right now running amok using very confusing language saying, oh, well, we're going to lower your rate, knowing full well that most taxpayers won't necessarily ask them if they lowered it to the no new revenue rate. And so they get to say they lowered your rate, but with increasing appraisals, it likely means in most areas of the state that your property tax burden itself will actually go up.
Good grief. Jeremy Kitchen, our guest right now, folks, here on the Salcedo Storm podcast, and he is the executive director of Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. All right. Number one thing that you would cut back on Texas government spending, what's the number one thing you would reduce?
I get asked this question a lot. I think it'd be a combination of things kind of all at the same time, but most of it would be this economic development, right, stuff that we're involved in. I think most, like in low regulation states, a lot of these corporations and businesses would come here of their own accord because they want to make money.
Yep.
So giving them tax breaks absolutely comes at the cost of not only the taxpayer on the other end, but it's ridiculous spending out of our budget. So
yeah, Elon Musk is about ready to open up a lithium production plant,
right,
in Galveston, I think, is what I heard. And
right.
They're giving him tax. They're giving one of the richest guys in the world tax breaks.
Using a program that is supposed to be going defunct at the end of this year, but that Republican leadership, at least on the House side, has certainly communicated they are interested in bringing back.
All right. Now, let me ask where you guys are on taxation. I find the property, as we've already alluded to, the property tax situation to be growingly, increasingly problematic for those who ultimately want to end up owning their own home. So there are proposals out there. And by the way, income tax is not an option. That is not an option for a free people in the state of Texas. So there's a fair tax. There's a consumption tax is what some people would call it. Or a mixture, or using a consumption tax to offset property taxes to give a relief there. What is I'm trying to figure out a best way to couch this. What is the best program that you have found that your organization says this is what Texas needs to move to?
So we take a two-pronged approach to this. I don't mean to belabor the point. We officially don't have, at least initially, a this is what we should replace the property tax system with. And that's because we believe we already spend way too much, so we should have to cut spending first, right? That's why we're getting things like surpluses on the front end. The back end, we're not naive. Obviously, we understand that government has to be funded somehow. So what would we replace it with? We are absolutely in support of kind of generally any sort of consumption-based tax, certainly not an income tax, as long as it proves both transparent and fair for the individual taxpayer, something that they can actually address their grievances, if you will, to those that represent them. Now, specifically what that looks like, I think we're kind of open to different sorts of consumption-based taxes, whether it's an increase just in a flat kind of sales tax or some version of that. We don't take an official position on, but we also think in the discussion, we don't even have to be there yet, right? We need to cut spending first and then have that. The lawmakers should have to come to us and say, this is why they need to spend this much to begin with.
Right. And again, I think that for those who are right-minded proposing a consumption tax or a what they call the fair tax,
sure.
I think by the mechanism of allowing the public a say, because when am I going to go and buy the $30,000 car, or now what the Democrats want to force us into is buying $100,000 electric vehicles because we can barely afford to put gas in our tank, but we can afford to drop $100,000 on an electric car. But let's just say, well, I can't afford that, so I'm not going to spend that money.
Sure.
So that gives the consumer, the taxpayer, a modicum of control, which would allow the consumers to moderate what they're sending to Austin, and then Austin would be forced to live within those constraints, which, praise God, would be less money going to Austin.
Yes, sir. I think we would agree with that sentiment. It's also important to realize, remember, most people, when they pay their property taxes, it's built into their escrow, right? Most people aren't writing a physical check. So they feel it, but they don't feel it in the way in which they would, right, where they write a physical check and they see that huge amount coming out all at one time. I'd argue it was intentionally built that way, right?
Oh, I would too. And, and maybe that would be something that we would require from our state lawmakers, that they must issue a statement every single year saying, this is what you paid to Austin this year.
Sure.
I mean, if we're about transparency in government, hell, you could put that on a website, send out an email. This is where you go log in to find out how much money that you gave to Austin this year. And I think you're right. I think eyeballs would pop out there and you'd start hearing demands for fiscal sanity and restraint. Am I wrong?
I think most taxpayers would be surprised to find out that, in fact, out of the 150 lawmakers that are in the House, 31 that are in the state Senate, very few of them actually even have a hand in the budget writing process. Most of them don't even see the bill, right, that comes before them until the week before they're going to vote on it, if that, right? And most of them have, they don't even involve themselves in the discussion on the floor, which, for lack of a better term, is political theater. They know it's going to go to a conference committee, which is ultimately five House reps and five senators, right? And they just determine the differences. And here we are towards the end of the legislative session, and it's the one thing they're constitutionally bound to do, and they pass it, right? Every time. It's kind of a disgusting process, if you will. And I've heard from several lawmakers to which it's just gotten worse and worse over their tenure, really, the last decade or so, as far as their participation or ability to participate in the process.
We really need a better class of politician, and we need to actually have representatives who represent, if you know what I mean. Jeremy Kitchen, everybody. He serves as the executive director of Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. If folks in Texas want to help you, if folks outside of Texas want to see what you guys are all about and maybe mirror your organization in states outside of the great state of Texas, where can they go?
Sure. Join the fight at Texas Taxpayers. That's Texas spelled out, texastaxpayers.com. We have a newly redesigned website as of yesterday. So look up there. There's all sorts of information, and it's a two-man team. We're happy to help.
How the hell is that for timing? Nice work. Brand new website and everything. Very nice. Jeremy Kitchen, man. Thanks for the visit.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks for the opportunity.
And that there puts a wrap on this Salcedo Storm podcast. Folks, do me a favor. Check out two websites. First, TexasScorecard.com. That's TexasScorecard.com. That's where you find all the news that impacts Texas. And if it's impacting Texas, it's definitely going to impact these United States. Also, check out ChrisSalcedo.com. That's how you can find me on AM 700 KSEV, the voice of Texas. There's an app for that. So you can hear us all over the country. And also on television, Newsmax TV, 4 o'clock in the afternoon until 5. Monday through Friday, always at home on the Salcedo Storm podcast. While you're at ChrisSalcedo.com, also leave me a voicemail, an email, or find out how you can book me for a speech. Until we visit again, my friends, remember this. A society's worth, it's not measured by how much power is stolen by an out-of-control government. We measure a society's worth by how much power is reserved for you and me, we the people. See ya.
Fox Tuesday. Monarch is TV's new smash hit.
We built a dynasty.
Critics rave. It's one of fall's hottest new shows.
Your mother is being blackmailed.
A new monarch after a new resident.
Monarch. Tuesday at 8 on Fox 7 Austin. Free Fox 7 Austin digital bundle. Download the Fox 7 Austin news app to stream local news morning or night. And the Fox 7 web for weather anytime, anywhere. Then catch the game live with the Fox Sports app. Get it now at fox7austin.com/apps.
The world is always on, but you shouldn't be. Put junk sleep to bed. During Mattress Firm's Sleeping Spree event, save up to 50% on Sealy, with queen mattresses starting at $349.99. Only at Mattress Firm. Restrictions apply. See store or mattressfirm.com for details.